The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. And on today's program, we have a three-part show for you. Coming up, we'll be talking with Kevin Purcell, who is organizer of a program called Prairie Voices, a free performance of Illinois poetry and prairie music by local actors that will be happening tomorrow at 3 o'clock at the Old State Capitol State Historic Site in downtown Springfield. Then, a feature on Opus 24, a presentation of the Decatur Choral Society. Their fall choral concert will be next Tuesday night at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Decatur, and I'll be talking with the director, Milton Scott. But first up, we will be having a few of the actors from Red Mask Players in Danville, production of a show that is something of a twist on the holiday classic by Charles Dickens called A Christmas Carol. Stay tuned to find out more. That was another from one of our new CDs here at the station. Played one yesterday, and this one also comes courtesy of the same person, a flutist and accordion player and other wind instruments of the Irish ilk, Laura McKenzie. This is called Laura and the Lads. And in this case, I should have looked up who the lads were playing with her, but she was the flutist, and the tune was called Piper on Horseback, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our first segment on today's three-part show, as the car guys like to say, well, this is a show in three halves, features Red Mask Players, three members of whom are with us live on the show today. They're giving their Christmas show, which is a take on the Charles Dickens holiday classic, A Christmas Carol. They're calling it Dickens' Christmas Carol, or A Dickens' Christmas Carol, with the subtitle, A Traveling Travesty in Two Tumultuous Acts. And that's the part that makes it sound particularly promising to me. If you may have said, well, I've seen A Christmas Carol one too many times, this one suggests that this is for that sort of person. And with me are Wilbur Bolton, who's going to be in the role of Scrooge, and two members of the acting ensemble, Robert House and Zachary Allen Taylor. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming over.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Did I get everybody's name right?
Yes, indeed.
It's Zachary Scott Taylor. There
Zachary
was a typo.
About that? Yeah, okay. I wasn't about to go on memory from what you told me when we came in, and so I just thought I'm usually safe going with the printed word. So much for that. I saw the exchange of looks, so I knew something was amiss here. Okay, so I gather this is going to be more of a comedy than Dickens usually is.
Absolutely. Yes. Tumultuous in as much as, what did you say, Wilbur? Seven people playing about...
A cast of thousands.
Yeah.
So will there be a bit of cross-dressing going on here as well?
Well, absolutely. I play, we figured out eight different characters, and I have... this is the first show I've ever done, Kevin, where I have a dresser because I have 15 costume changes, so
15.
I really do need a bit of a hand back there. My darling wife is helping me keep all of my various pieces of clothing arranged, at least where I know where they are, which is a big help. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun, and most of the characters, are the people in the cast, I should say, do change costume numerous times in the course of the show.
I consider myself lucky because I only have to change twice during the course of the play. So I play Sir Selsdon Piddock, who is the leader of the acting troupe that's putting on Dickens' Christmas Carol, and I have the Scrooge role, so I only have two costume changes.
So you get you have the one costume as the actor and one as Scrooge.
Well, actually, both costumes are as Scrooge. One is Scrooge, the working everyday Scrooge in his office, and the other is the traditional picture that people have of Scrooge in his nightshirt and night hat. So,
and Zach,
this is really a big learning experience, actually. It's really interesting to have to learn the order in which each of these costumes is meant to be put on. It's really funny because a couple of times you forget that you're wearing a wig and you're not supposed to be wearing a wig in that scene, so you have to yank it off and throw it behind the curtain.
Uh-huh.
And is that part of the script?
It's actually not, but if that happens, it just makes
it's
the audience.
Working out to be that way sometimes.
It really is quite hilarious, and I think the audience will really enjoy that.
So people are being careful, but not too careful in arranging the costumes?
Really, that's actually the point. You know, I mean, as long as we've got the costume on, and we have to throw a piece off behind the stage, you know, I think the audience is going to get a real kick out of that.
That'll hasten the point, I guess. And Scrooge's lovely wife is directing the show.
That is true. Yes, my wife Linda Bolton has taken it upon herself to direct this show. She's doing an excellent job, if I do say so myself.
Yes, she is.
By the way, just a tip for anybody who hears part of this interview and comes away wondering what we are talking about, but you did hear something about Red Mask Players. If you go to their website under current season, you won't actually see this show. It's sort of an extra. Go to the home page, and it is right there. Christmas show, December 2-4, a funny take on Dickens. And I know you guys brought in a few scenes.
We did.
What is your first one, and how'd you like to set that up for us?
Well, the first one is in Scrooge's office, and the play has just gotten started. And those of you that have seen or read Dickens' actual Christmas Carol, this is about the point in the story where nephew Fred comes in, and Bob Cratchit, me, I'm busily at work, and Scrooge is in his office, and we pick up when Fred enters.
And Fred, in this case, is played by Zachary Scott Taylor, as opposed to the other person, the other misidentified person previously. Three members of the cast of Red Mask Players, production of A Dickens Christmas Carol. Have at it, gentlemen.
Let me hear another word out of you, and you'll keep your Christmas by losing your situation.
Yes.
Don't be angry, Uncle. Come dine with us tomorrow.
Why, I would rather see you down below with the devil first than to come to your home.
But why, Uncle? Why?
Why did you get married?
Because I fell in love.
Because you fell in love? Boy, the only thing in this world more ridiculous than a Merry Christmas. Now leave me, sir. Good afternoon.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes, what is it, Cratchit?
Begging your pardon, sir, but I was wondering if I could ask to take leave of me post for a moment to relieve myself?
Yes, of course.
Thanks, sir.
But, Uncle, you never even came to see me before I was married. Why are you giving my marriage as a reason for not coming, then?
I said good afternoon.
I'm truly sorry from the bottom of my heart, Uncle. We've never had a quarrel. I've tried to keep the spirit to Christmas, and I will to the end. So Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Goodbye.
And a Happy New Year.
Goodbye.
Merry Christmas, Bob.
And that's our first introduction to, in the play, of course, to Scrooge and his nasty attitude. And then if you'd like to move on to the next one, we have another little piece here ready to go with that.
We can, but let's just see if I have good enough memory to have detected there really was only one line in there that was a deviation from... an essential deviation from the original story.
Otherwise, pretty close so far.
Yeah, that's about it, right?
Well, and the reason those have to be built in, as I mentioned, I'm playing a lot of different characters. I have to continually think of a reason to excuse myself off stage to go change clothes and come back on in a different door as someone else. So.
Yeah. So are you the one with the most costume changes, or not necessarily?
I would say I probably am. Probably. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
In this case, Bob has to be back on stage in about 10 seconds as an alms collector, so
yes.
He's making a rapid switch from Cratchit to...
Also, the character that I play, Teddy Shoeb, he is also one of the alms collectors. So as soon as I, as nephew Fred, leave stage... Bob Howes.
He zips around behind and...
Exactly. I have to go backstage, change costumes in about 5 seconds and turn right around and come back on stage. It's obviously still me, but the posture, the costume, it's different enough that the audience will be amused by it.
We
but
hope.
They will,
we sincerely hope that. Yes. Anyway.
If they're not amused,
that is our
I
desire.
Will be surprised. But it is... Yeah.
Okay. Scene number two. What is the setting for this one?
Scene number two is where Scrooge is visited by two alms collectors who are collecting money for the poor so that they might have a Merry Christmas.
So this does. This is essentially the next scene.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
In the actual play.
Right. Enter.
Would this be Scrooge and Marley's?
Yes.
And am I speaking to Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley has been dead for 7 years. In fact, 7 years ago this very night.
Well, then, I'm certain that you, as his partner, Mr. Scrooge, will wish to continue to be as generous as he was in donating to the charity that we represent.
Yes, yes. At this festive time of the year, we try to help the poor and destitute who is suffering. There are many thousands, sir, who do not even have the bare necessities of life, sir.
Bah. There are prisons and workhouses to care for these people, and laws have been made by the government to see to their welfare. As far as I am concerned, the government is looking after them well enough.
But, my dear sir, we are just trying to bring a little extra cheer to these poor unfortunates. Raise a little money, you know, to purchase some food and some drink and perhaps just a bit of warmth. And at this time of year, we realize that everyone rejoices more in their giving. So, how much of a donation might I put you down for?
Nothing.
You wish your gift to remain anonymous?
Ah, yes.
I wish to be left alone. I do not consider Christmas merry, and I have no desire to make idle, worthless people merry. Their welfare is not my problem. I have my own business to attend to, and I do not concern myself with the business of others. Now, good afternoon, gentlemen.
But, sir, there is never enough government support for all these poor people, and many will die,
Humbug, then let them die. We already have enough of a surplus population of these wretched creatures anyhow.
And that's that.
And that is that one. So these are scenes from a Dickens Christmas Carol put on by Red Mask Players, starting the second and continuing through the fourth at Catherine Randolph Theater. The note I have here, which is actually the note off of your website, says that this is sort of... something of a farewell tour for a particular theater company, like the 15th annual farewell tour or something
the,
like that?
The Styx upon Thump Theater Company has been doing A Christmas Carol for the last 15 years. And I think most of the players have been with them for the entire duration.
There's a little bit of jealousy written into it between... particularly two of the ladies that are in the cast and in the troupe, and that adds to some of the humor of the show. It's pretty slick. And also, at the very beginning, we, meaning the rest of the cast, make it pretty obvious we're kind of tired of Sheldon here because the audience just loves to hear him say words like, "Bah, humbug," and interrupts us with their unstopping applause, and we let them know that it's getting pretty old here.
We make it obvious. We roll our eyes. We, you know, cough and, you know, sneeze and make noise and, you know, try generally get the idea over, like, get it over with. So. Yeah.
And after 15 years of doing the same play, the scenery is looking a bit shop-worn. Stage crew is a bit lax in their handling of the effects that are supposed to go on. The understudies don't quite remember all their lines.
Haven't quite studied enough.
And I gather that some of the understudies do have roles on this particular
performance. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, sir.
So obviously some of this is going to be hard to convey on the radio, but we're doing our best here.
We are.
Our actors are Wilbur Bolton in the role of Scrooge, Robert House in multiple roles, and Zachary Scott Taylor also in multiple roles. And who's doing what next?
Well, we now move to the middle of the show. And again, this is a couple of short little scenes here that the author of the play wrote in just enough to keep with Dickens' original story. As we move through the three ghosts, this is during the period of the time when Scrooge is with the ghost of the future. And so we have a couple of short little scenes here that we'd like to just do on that.
I don't know much about it. I only know he's dead.
Well, then, when did he die?
Sometime last night, I believe.
I thought he'd never die. What did they do with his money?
Well, they left it to me, that much I know. Mm. You know, it'll probably be a cheap funeral. Do you think we should go?
Well, only if a lunch is provided.
Could those men have been talking about Marley's death? No, that was in the past, and this is the ghost of the future. Did I know anyone who was close enough to me that could have been the subject of this gentleman's conversation? No. Well, I'll simply remember all that I've heard, and perhaps when I see myself in some of these future shadows, perhaps that will give me a clue as to why the spirit had me listen to this conversation.
I'm first!
Well, what are these, then? Bed curtains?
Yes, bed curtains, and his blankets, too.
Well, then, what's this?
It's his nightshirt, to be sure. And you can look all you want, old Joe, but you won't find a hole in it. It was his best shirt.
Oh, this is a result of his life, don't you see? He frightened us all away from him when he was alive. But now we's a-making a profit off of him that he dead.
Spirit, this unhappy man that you're speaking of could have been me, for I have been leading just that kind of life.
And that, of course, like I said, the author of this wrote in just enough little scenes that everybody can kind of continually recognize the classic story, naturally.
In fact, that scene where the woman is speaking with old Joe, it's in fact two women, and they are saying that line at the same time. These are the two women that are a bit jealous of each other. One is actually supposed to be that character. The other one wants that character, and they've been fighting over it this whole play since the woman who plays Bettina came in, and she storms in through the auditorium, through the audience. So we know she's supposed to be that character, and someone else is doing it, and she's not happy about it.
Not the least bit.
So
another visual gag that
yes.
You will have to go to the show to see how this all plays out. It's Red Mask Players, production of A Dickens Christmas Carol, a traveling travesty in two tumultuous acts. It opens on the 2nd of December, continues through the 4th, with shows at 7:30 on Friday and Saturday, and the matinee on Sunday the 4th is at 2 o'clock at the Catherine Randolph Theater in Danville. And there are no reserved seats. Tickets are available at the door, but for more information, you can certainly go to their website and also check out the rest of their season at redmaskplayers.com. And it's worth checking because it is their 75th season, which is something of a milestone for any theater company. Wilbur Bolton, Robert House, and Zachary Scott Taylor, thanks very much for joining us on the show today, and best of luck with Scrooge and Company.
Thanks, sir. We appreciate having a chance to meet with you and be on your show.
Yes, thank you.
Stay tuned next for a feature on Prairie Voices, which is a performance of Illinois poetry and prairie music by local actors happening at the Old State Capitol in Springfield. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. We have support today from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods at this intersection of 6th and University in Champaign, featuring foods from around the world, including imported chocolates, cookies, cheeses, and gift baskets for the holidays. Also, World Harvest carries fine specialty ingredients like saffron, smoked paprika, truffle salt, grain of paradise, and more. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Softly as the wind blows, the milkweed feet of autumn rain. Over the fields the brown bird goes, singing its song of winter again.
Singing
of frost, its cold refrain,
wakens the heron and the long-legged crane. And sends them crying, and sends them flying, trying to catch the teasing sun before the freezing has begun.
Softly as the wind blows, the snow winter stars on my window pane. High in the storm, the brown bird goes, singing its song of winter again.
Singing
of frost,
its cold refrain, wakens the heron and the long-legged crane.
And sends them crying, and sends them flying,
trying to catch the teasing sun before the freezing has begun.
Softly as the wind blows the frost away to clear for spring. Listen to the one who knows, singing a song of winter again.
Singing
of frost,
its cold refrain, wakens the heron and the long-legged crane.
And sends them crying, and sends them flying,
trying to catch the teasing sun before the freezing has begun. Trying to catch the teasing sun before the freezing has begun.
We heard a song called Winter Brown Bird, which is written by a woman named Julie Babb and performed here by a vocalist Kevin Purcell and Asni Vigasa and with pianist Debbie Watts. This is one of the songs that will be on a program called Prairie Voices at the Old State Capitol in Springfield on the Thanksgiving Friday, 3 p.m., otherwise known as Black Friday. But as it says here in the press release, this event, unlike holiday shopping, is free, which is a nice way to put it, and everyone is welcome to attend. And one of those singers is with me right now, Kevin Purcell. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Kevin. Delighted to be here.
So somebody else here at the station had forwarded this press release to me. It's not an event I had known anything about. Have you been in on it are you among the creators of the idea?
Yes, this is my show, actually, and was really launched based on the inspiration of the innovative Justin Blandford, who is the site manager of the Old State Capitol, who several years ago started a program called History Comes Alive, and encouraged me to do both this show and another original play I have done called Lincoln and Shakespeare to help bring these things alive in Springfield in a variety of ways.
So between yourself and Asni, who you told me a little earlier is a Norwegian name.
Yes.
Are you doing both the singing and the reading of the poetry that will be at this event?
Yes, we both do. We share those honors. We sing songs together and apart, and we also perform poems together and apart. It's a variety in that way.
And who are the poets?
The poets are our Central Illinois prairie poets. Carl Sandburg, who is from Galesburg originally, Edgar Lee Masters, who was born and raised in Petersburg, and then Vachel Lindsay, who was from Springfield.
That was always a name that I always thought was a rather interesting one, Vachel, who is actually a male person.
Yes.
And Sandburg is the poet who I'm certainly much more familiar with than the other two.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the hallmarks of their writing styles, if you can talk about that a little bit?
Well, Masters, many people will know primarily through his piece Spoon River Anthology, and which is where he writes poems from people who are writing or speaking from the grave after their life is ended. And we do actually one of those poems in this show called Lucinda Matlock. Asni does that one, a beautiful poem about a woman reflecting on her life and the 70 years she was married. And the closing lines are, degenerate sons and daughters, life is too strong for you. It takes life to love life. And so Masters is famous for those kinds of pieces about people speaking from beyond the grave to their friends and families who are back on the living planet. And Lindsay is a fabulist. He loved nature and was engaged around the rapture of nature. Rachel Lindsay actually walked across the country on two different occasions and stopped on roadside houses and performed his own poems for food. And he was kind of a Johnny Appleseed of his own poetry, if you will. And survived on food along the way. So he must have been pretty good because he had enough to eat to cross the country on two different occasions back around 1909 and 1910. And Lindsay was also famous because he was one of the first poets to actually perform his poems dramatically. Most poets at the turn of the 20th century were very dull readers of their poetry. And Lindsay believed that poems should come to life. And so when we do Lindsay poems in this piece, for instance, one like Two Old Crows, we perform it much as Lindsay would have. And we actually have the audience participate with us in that poem because there are crows and bees and all kinds of things going on. And we do it once, and then we come back and have them play crows and bees and do the poem with us the second time.
When was he around?
Rachel Lindsay was born in 1879, and he died in 1930. And his home actually is still preserved in Springfield, just behind the governor's mansion on 5th Street, the Rachel Lindsay home, and is open for tourists Tuesday through Saturday, and people can tour for free and learn about Lindsay's life and his artwork and his poems.
So when you say that you will be performing his poems much as he might have, do we have evidence of what he might have done?
Well, we actually do. There were recordings done of him. As I say, he was he was one of the most famous performers of his poems in the early 20th century. In fact, people, of course, know the name Langston Hughes as a poet who was from New York. Well, oddly enough, Rachel Lindsay was Langston Hughes' mentor. Langston Hughes actually came and visited Lindsay in his home in Springfield. And so Lindsay had huge influence over poets of the early 20th century, and especially around poets, helping poets learn to actually physically and vocally realize their material aloud.
And I have heard Langston Hughes to his poems.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think there's quite a number of recordings of those.
Yes, absolutely. Lindsay has recordings done from the 1920s of him doing his own work. And so I've had the opportunity to listen to some of those. They're, you know, scratchy recordings, but you can still get a sense of the sort of power and emotion and vocal range that he had as a poet, which is pretty unusual, especially back then. Now, today, of course, we think more about performing poems, you know, rap artists and other poets, poetry slams. Those are things that back in the early 20th century, it was pretty dull stuff to listen to a poet perform their own work.
We're talking with Kevin Purcell, who is an instigator, creator of a show called Prairie Voices, a free performance of Illinois poetry and prairie music by himself and Asni Vigasa. And will the pianist be that who we heard earlier, Debbie Watts, will she be performing on your show as well?
Well, she normally does. Debbie happens to be out of town for Thanksgiving weekend, and our substitute is Virginia Hosking, who's played with us before, and she is wonderful. And she will be performing at the Old State Capitol performance on Friday the 25th.
And that will be at 3 o'clock.
Correct.
On the State Historic Site there. And I note here that you were inspired by a production at Sangamon Auditorium that you were involved in that had to do with these three poets.
It's true. You know, in February of 1981, which was when the Sangamon Auditorium opened in Springfield at what is now University of Illinois Springfield, I was asked by a faculty member, Dennis Camp, to portray the character of Edgar Lee Masters, and there were two other colleagues of mine, actors Kirk Hart and Gary Vitale, who played Lindsay and Sandberg, and the three of us, along with Lee Steiner as narrator, performed Dennis Camp's piece of three Illinois poets, and it included some of the poems that we're doing here in Prairie Voices. And that was actually the inaugural event opening the Sangamon Auditorium. Shortly after that, Hal Holbrook came and did Mark Twain Tonight, which was sort of a big public event. But we had 800 people in the audience to see us do three Illinois poets in 1981.
No, that's fantastic. And as you say, it's now University of Illinois Springfield, was then Sangamon State University, which I'd nearly forgotten already.
Yeah, that's right. It's not that long ago.
You identify this as Illinois poetry, which you've talked about, and prairie music. How have you selected the songs for this show?
Well, actually, in concert with the composer David Mahler I mentioned earlier, David and I were actually commissioned to create a piece, this particular piece. Originally, I was still living back in Seattle about 6 or 7 years ago, even though I'm from Illinois. So we were asked, actually, by a woman whose family, the Staley family, owns a farm out in Loamie, which is west of Springfield. And their parents were having their 50th anniversary, and my friend, Barbara Staley, asked me if I could come up with poems and songs that would help celebrate the prairie, which their parents loved. And so that inspired this piece. And then once I'd done it once and found the music with David Mahler, then after moving to Illinois, I took the idea to Justin Blanford, and it seemed to align perfectly with his History Comes Alive series. So we started doing it actually a couple summers ago.
So the song we heard to open this conversation, Winter Brown Bird by Julie Babb, is one that you found earlier or that you found specifically for this event?
No, we found that when we started searching for music to go with these poems.
And we're going to close with one by David Mahler. And this song is called Lonely Rolling River. Kevin Purcell and Asni Vigasar are the vocalists. Pianist Debbie Watts is on this recording. But on the show on Friday at 3 o'clock at the Old State Capitol called Prairie Voices, you'll have, again, the pianist Virginia Hosking, along with Kevin and Osney, singing both songs and reading poetry by Vachel Lindsay, Edgar Lee Masters, and Carl Sandburg. And it is a free program. And I might as well mention here also that this is on Saturday. On Saturday, if you like, also at the Old State Capitol, there's a program called Meet a Boy in Blue, a living history program that's at 11 Saturday morning and then at 1 and 3 in the afternoon. And the theme, Governor Yates, the Friend of the Wounded Soldier. You can get more information by Googling Old State Capitol or Illinois Historic Preservation Agency. Kevin, thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local.
My pleasure. Thank you.
As I wandered through the prairies of my childhood days, past the farms and rolling hillsides green with memories, every leafy oak and dusty pathway call my name, saying, wandering friend, don't you know? Every lonely rolling river must roll home. In a stately little river town in Illinois, where the gentle old Galena still meanders. Overhead when white clouds billow, don't they call my name, saying, wandering friend, don't you know? Home. Every lonely rolling river must roll home.
when those childhood memories call and voices sing you back to the scenes you know by heart like aging melodies. Let the compass of your soul direct your footsteps home. My dear wandering friend, oh, you know every lonely rolling river must roll home.
By thy rivers gently flowing, Illinois, Illinois, o'er thy verdant prairies growing, Illinois, Illinois, comes an echo on the breeze, rustling through the leafy trees, and its mellow tones are these, Illinois, Illinois, and its mellow tones are these, Illinois,
Illinois. My dear wandering friend, don't you know
rolling home?
Every lonely rolling river must roll home. Rolling river, rolling river, rolling river.
Kevin Purcell and Asni Vigasa, the vocalists, and they will also be the actors for Prairie Voices at the Old State Capitol Historic Site in Springfield tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock for a free program. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Stay tuned next for our third portion of today's show, focusing on the Choral Ensemble in Decatur, Opus 24, and their fall concert, which will be happening next Tuesday. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from these business partners: Busey Bank, Bates Commodities Normal, Inuka Incorporated, Fairmount, and A-Plus Farms Limited of Pine Village. These business partners join the Friends of WYLL in making great programs possible. Thank you. Called The Keel Row by John Rutter from a suite called A Sprig of Time, and that's T-H-Y-M-E, in a performance from this last May by Opus 24, the choral ensemble based in Decatur. They're giving their fall concert, or winter concert, just about, coming up next Tuesday at St. Patrick Catholic Church, which is where the one in May was performed and recorded. That will be at 7:30. The church is located on East El Dorado Street, in Decatur. And on the phone with me right now is the director of Opus 24, Milton Scott. Milt, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be there in one capacity or another.
Yeah. Usually you've been able to come over here, and our schedule over here didn't quite give you enough time to do that. But I'm glad that we're able to talk about it. We're going to hear a couple of other pieces from that May recording, from that May concert coming up in just a little bit. And St. Patrick sounds like a wonderful place to hear a choral group.
It is a very good space, and I think certain music sounds good in there. Lots of Renaissance things and double choir, and the pieces where you need a little extra, you know, ambiance and resonance. It's a wonderful space.
So does that mean you'll have some music from the Renaissance this concert?
No, not necessarily. But we are doing this concert. We're featuring the Requiem of John Rutter, which is a 40-minute piece. And that has harp and oboe and cello and horn and timpani. And it has some really nice instrumentation that's going to sound very, very good in that space. So we're excited about that. And plus some other Advent and Christmas pieces as well. So we're pretty excited about singing there with this concert.
Yeah, you're calling it From Darkness into Light.
Yes.
In what ways do some of the other pieces besides the Requiem fit into that theme?
Well, the Requiem is more about the darkness, even though there's a lot of optimism in there. You know, it ends with the Lux Aeterna and kind of leads us into the next section of light, of Advent and Christmas, and the joy of that light. And the program cover itself even reflects that, the darkness of 9/11 with a ray of light through the dust. And the other cover is a ray of light over the city of Bethlehem in the darkness. So it's kind of a transfiguration from the pain of that experience into the joy of what is yet to come.
And you referred to the final movement, the Lux Aeterna, which means eternal light.
Yes. It begins with a Kyrie and ends with the words of Kyrie eleison. So with that movement, it's great.
The Requiem of John Rutter was, at least when I've heard it, it gave the impression of having been somewhat modeled on or perhaps inspired by the Requiem of Gabriel Fauré.
Yes, somewhat of that, and a little bit also of the ideas that Brahms used, because Rutter has put in some movements which are actually non-liturgical movements. He's put in this wonderful setting of The Lord is My Shepherd, you know, which is, this part is in English, and then there are some other things, Psalm 51, Out of the Depths, and so he's mixed those in with a couple of traditional movements from a Requiem. So it's a little bit like Brahms did as well, but there is a lot of sound, which is like Fauré. Yes.
Well, it's a beautiful piece, and as long as we're talking about this theme of darkness into light, let's sort of take our own darkness piece, so to speak, from your May concert. It's a beautiful one by Eleanor Daly. I think you told me she's a Canadian composer.
Yes, I believe so.
And this is called In Remembrance. Beautiful piece here. It's sung by Opus 24 under the direction of Milton Scott, and they will be giving their concert for this season next Tuesday night at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Decatur. You're listening to Live and Local.
Thank you.
That was Eleanor Daly's In Remembrance, sung by Opus 24, the choral group in Decatur, and they're going to be played, Yeah, they'll be played by Milton Scott, conducted by Milton Scott. Some people would say that that's not, that's probably a Freudian slip on my part somehow or another. And their concert will be next Tuesday. That performance came from last May at St. Patrick Catholic Church. You know, I may have asked you this before, Milt, and if so, I've forgotten the answer, but how did you come to call the choral ensemble Opus 24?
Well, we started with 11 singers just wanting to sing things like we used to in college. Got up to 17, did our first concert with 17 singers, and we were searching for a title, and I don't know, one of our tenors loved the cartoon character Opus, which I believe is like a platypus or something like this, and of course means work. And 24 was a goal that I had for the ensemble as far as numbers. So it just had a little ring to it of Opus 24, and so I kept that, and we have about 42 singers on the books. We're singing 38 on this concert. But it just stuck, and when I go to conventions, people say, well, how is Opus 38 or 41? I say, oh, it's still Opus 24. I don't know how. It just had a ring to it, so we kept it.
Otherwise, you'd have to change the name with every concert.
Right, it'd be like the stock market, you know, up and down, Opus 3. That's not what I want. You know, when you establish a logo and letterhead paper, you don't want to keep changing.
No, you don't. But looked at that way, compared to the stock market, you guys are doing great.
Yeah, we're pretty steady. I'm real happy with that.
You had, as people will hear in a little bit, you had some instruments involved in the May concert, and the Requiem has various instruments involved.
Right.
Is that a habit you've gotten into? In addition to piano, you do unaccompanied and then also some other instrumental pieces?
I do. I like it for the choir's variety and for my variety. I'm really blessed being in Decatur because within 45 miles I can hire any instrumentation I want, whether it's a Celtic band or brass from Millikan, and also I've used members of the University of Illinois and ISU. And so I like to do something on the concert. If it's just a solo trumpet or a couple of violins or something on a piece, that's fine. This particular orchestration is very small. It's his chamber orchestration for the Rudder, and it has a lot of color to it, and it's very, very nice. Probably next year, next season, not next season, but next fall, or maybe even in the spring, I will use I'll use brass. It'll be rather some festive things because it's our 20th year, so we're going to have a big concert in May. So I like to do that, and the audience likes that variety too.
Oh, sure. Well, and brass instruments in the sound of a big resonant cathedral-type church setting,
yes,
is really wonderful.
Yes, we really like, and we're blessed with so many great instrumentalists in the area and they like to play with us as well. That's what's rewarding.
Tell me about your summer. You took members of the choir to Ireland, Wales, and England for a special event.
We did. Part of our group combined with a group from Des Moines, Iowa, under the direction of Ben Alloway, who has a connection to Illinois. Doing some of his studies at the University of Illinois. And so we premiered a work called Mass of Heaven and Earth, and combined with the Sands brothers, Tommy Sands and his brother, Northern Irish musicians, and did a tour of Ireland and Wales. Did some concerts in some of the big cathedrals there, and it was a very good time. And my singers enjoyed it. We couldn't all go, which was too bad, but we did have a very good musical experience. So.
Were you down to 17 for that one?
Well,
or 24?
Actually, we only took 13 singers from here, and we had about 20-some from Iowa. And so we had a size of choir which was very workable.
Sure.
And it turned out very well, and that particular tour and the premiere, which was in Des Moines, we are putting together, not we, but Ben is, and has almost finished it, a DVD, and it's being produced by Iowa Public Television. So people will get a chance to see it at some time, even in this area, we hope.
Yeah, that'll be fantastic. Well, it's always wonderful when groups can, even if you can't take the whole group, I'm sure it helps to build a lot of camaraderie, which you already have in abundance, I'm sure.
Yes, it did help. And, you know, you feel sorry when you feel bad when you come back, you know, and you have to tell the others what a good time you had and whatever. But, you know, that's the nature of the community choir. You can't all travel all the time, and that's just the way it is. But,
that's the way it
is.
Yep,
we're still pretty tight, I think.
Well, folks, we'll get a chance to hear just how tight Opus 24 is on Tuesday night at 7:30 at St. Patrick Catholic Church on East Eldorado Street in Decatur. The program is From Darkness Into Light. It features the Requiem of John Rutter and a lot of and some seasonal music as well. Will be directed by Milton Scott, who's my guest on this portion of Live and Local, Opus 24. Best of luck with the concert, Milton. Thanks for joining us.
And thank you for your publicity. Appreciate it.
And here is another piece from their May concert of just this past May, also at St. Patrick Catholic Church. I should say that the pianist we've heard and will hear is Beth Creighton, and there's some other instrumentalists involved here. This was called on the program simply an Italian overture, and many, if not most, listeners will recognize it soon enough. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Thank you.
It was Opus 24 from their fall concert, I mean from their spring concert just this past May at St. Patrick Catholic Church. Their fall concert in Decatur will be next Tuesday night at 7:30 in the direction of Milton Scott. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. A few events you can go see and hear live tonight. The Shanties play traditional Irish music at Luca Grill in Bloomington at 7 o'clock. Dan Hubbard is at Knights of Columbus in Bloomington tonight at 8 o'clock. Southside Cindy and the Sliptones are at the Contemporary Arts Center in Peoria this evening at 5:30. The Diva and the Dude are at Clark Bar in Champaign tonight at 6:30. Kings Highway play the blues at the Pink House in Ogden tonight at 7. The Sugar Prophets play the blues at Uncle Buck's in Mahomet tonight at 9. And it's Midwest Dueling Pianos at Knights of Columbus in Decatur tonight at 8 o'clock. There is more. Check your local listings, as they say. You're listening to 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, and we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. I'm Kevin Kelly for Live and Local. I'll be off for the holiday through Monday, so you'll hear classical music during this time slot, 12 to 1, Thursday, Friday, and Monday. Certainly hope you enjoy your holiday. We're currently at 45 degrees, and it's just about a minute past 1.